All right, time to get to. We're joined right now by an NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, a boxing analyst for DAZN, host of the Crossover Podcast, SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, and Inside the Paint on SI TV. Man, he is busy and a very good friend of the program. Chris Mannix is my guest. Chris, how you holding up, bro?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, man. I'm great. I know you've got a lot going on. What with two conference finals? You got a heavyweight title fight. Magic doing whatever the hell Magic is doing. In fact, how busy are you right now?
Pretty busy. I'm in Toronto for game four tonight. Back to New York next week for Anthony Joshua's fight. I think we all saw what Deontay Wilder did, and we're all dying to see Anthony Joshua face him at some point this year. So it keeps you busy, that's for sure.
All right, so why don't we just go right there? I was going to start with some boxing, but let me follow you. What would a Deontay Wilder-Anthony Joshua fight, how big would that be, and what would that mean for boxing?
It's the biggest fight that can be made in boxing today, and it's not even close. It's the biggest heavyweight fight this century, and I'm not sure there's a very close second. You're talking about the undisputed heavyweight championship between two guys that are, I think, equally powerful. Maybe you can say Wilder, because of the angles he throws from, is a little more powerful, but Joshua's got an extraordinary knockout percentage as well, and equally questionable with their chins. I mean, Wilder has been buckled before. Go back to the Luis Ortiz fight for a recent example of it. Joshua has been down. Vladimir Klitschko put him down in their fight before ultimately getting knocked out. So you have two guys with massive power and shaky chins going up against each other in a fight that I wouldn't put a nickel on, not a nickel to bet on, because I don't know which way it's going to go. That to me screams huge fight, and I really hope they get a deal done.
Okay, that was my next point, Chris. Do you think that fight happens, or is there a risk that there might be a Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe situation?
You know, I don't think it would be Lewis Bowe in that they never fight each other, but I think, unfortunately, we could be in for an extended delay. We all know the situation with the promoters. Deontay is an Al Heyman guy. Eddie Hearn promotes Anthony Joshua. The network affiliations, Showtime and Fox for Wilder, DAZN for Joshua. And people have said to me on social media, well, why can't they do a Showtime HBO type of deal like we saw with Pacquiao Mayweather? That just doesn't work, because both these networks, DAZN and Showtime, have different business models. Showtime wants to do a pay-per-view, which is essentially a one-off cash grab. DAZN doesn't do pay-per-views. In fact, anybody that knows anything about DAZN knows that they've been saying over and over again that pay-per-view is dead, that they're doing things differently with their monthly subscription-based service. So you can't do a joint thing. What it's going to take, I think, is for after the Joshua fight, for DAZN to put so much money on the table that Wilder can't turn it down. I talked to Shelley Finkel, who's Wilder's co-manager, about this, and he told me that there was a number that DAZN could get to, and there was a type of contract that DAZN could offer that Wilder would accept for a Joshua fight. Let's hope it's reasonable enough to get Wilder there.
Chris Mannix joining us on the program. The sport definitely needs that fight. All right, so back to basketball. Golden State's back in the NBA Finals. They've got some time off, Chris, before the Finals. How would you compare this Warriors team to the ones that came before it?
Well, it's different than the ones that had Kevin Durant, because, you know, Kevin Durant was a singular superstar, you know, doing incredible things. And, you know, as this narrative, Jim, that's out there that I see all over the place, that maybe the Warriors are better without – it's just nonsense. I mean, Kevin Durant, first of all, he was great in the first two rounds of the playoffs, and he's been great in the last two finals. He has been the overriding reason that Golden State has won these back-to-back championships. But they're a different team without him. They clearly play more fluidly. Draymond Green just seems to be more energized when he has a bigger role out there on the floor. I tell you, watching Draymond, Jim, I've been among the people that have said that the Warriors should think about trading Draymond this offseason. He's coming up onto a contract year. He can be a free agent in 2020. He's going to want a big number, and he has looked like a depreciating asset over the last year or so. I mean, his three-point shooting has cratered this year. Defensively, when you talk to scouts, they say he's still great at defending fours, but doesn't defend threes and fives the way he once did with such skill in years past. But after watching Draymond just do what he did, if Kevin Durant winds up leaving, it might be wise to try to extend Draymond and keep him around long-term because of how well he plays alongside Steph Curry. So they're certainly a different team. I don't know if they're better yet, because I think the finals will present a tough test. But they're certainly a different team without Kevin Durant.
Chris Mannix joining us. You know, that criticism of Draymond, I think, throughout the regular season, Chris, I think that's fair. But in the postseason, he's leaned out once again. He's focused. He's dialed in. I mean, I've never seen the guy play better. I think Steph Curry looks as good as he's ever looked as well. So they're not better without Kevin Durant. They're just different. Chris Mannix joining us. You mentioned Game 4 of the Bucks and Raptors. That's tonight. It's not like either team put on a clinic in Game 3. So how do you think they both show up this evening?
You know, hard to say because you're right. Game 3 was ugly. I mean, a double overtime, I don't know what word you'd use to describe it. It wasn't a thriller. It wasn't really a slugfest. It was just two teams that didn't play great basketball, and Toronto wind up getting the better of it. The Bucks starting lineup, I would imagine, will be a lot better in Game 4. Virtually no one in that starting lineup played well, including Giannis, who had his worst game of the postseason. I think he's going to play a lot better. The health of Kawhi, I think, is a variable in all this. I mean, he looked like he was dragging that leg around, Jim, in the minutes he played. He played 52 minutes in that game. I'm interested to see what he looks like coming out of the gate. They made a really good lineup switch, not a change, but a lineup switch when they put Kawhi on Giannis to start the game. I think that did a lot to take Giannis out of his rhythm, and the double teams they sent were really effective. We'll see if that changes in this series, but I do think it's very evenly matched. I mean, Milwaukee looked great in winning those first two games, but this series has been and continues to be a coin flip to me. I think the Raptors, who are great at home, can come out and win big if they need to on the game tonight, and that puts a lot of pressure on a young Milwaukee team that doesn't have a lot of guys that have been to the stage before. That puts a lot of pressure on them to go back home and get things done in Game 5. So this is the type of series that I think very easily could go 6-7 games.
Chris Mannix joining us for a few moments, talking basketball and boxing. So, Chris, obviously Magic Johnson goes on First Take, takes a blowtorch to the Laker organization, one that he professes to love so much. What do you make of his comments?
I mean, I don't know what he was thinking. And if you're Jeannie Buss, it's got to be two strikes and you're out. I mean, you quit without telling you her a month ago, and now, by all accounts, you know, in a shocking way, you go on ESPN and you just napalm your entire organization, and you peel back the curtain and effectively confirm every report that's been out there about the dysfunction within your team. Now, there are a lot of things I think he's right about. There are way too many cooks in the kitchen in Los Angeles, and there are way too many people not qualified to be advising on high-level basketball decisions having a voice in this. I couldn't pick Linda Rambis out of a lineup. I don't know what she's doing having any sort of influential role in basketball decisions. Kurt Rambis has had a long basketball career, but it hasn't been a successful basketball career. I don't know if you want him making those decisions. Rob Pelinka should be making all the calls. You know, at this point, if you're investing in Rob, he should be your guy. And look, I think that Rob has some stuff to answer for, especially when it comes to free agent decisions and the style of play the Lakers played last year. But the draft's been pretty good. I mean, Lonzo Ball's a good player. Kyle Kuzma's a great pick. Josh Hart was a great pick. You got to give Rob Pelinka credit for that. But they've got to settle things down. This team has the potential to explode by midseason. If they don't get a guy, an Anthony Davis or a marquee free agent this summer, it could get really ugly really fast. They have to find a way to make it clear from now until whenever that Rob Pelinka is the man making decisions. And that has to extend to the coaching bench where Frank Vogel has to get that support. Jim, I'm a huge Frank Vogel supporter. I think Frank Vogel is much more the coach we saw in Indiana for 5.5 years than the guy we saw for 2 years in Orlando. Orlando was a mess. His front office got fired after year one. I think he's much more the coach we saw coach the Pacers to a pretty high level, but he needs support. You can't let the rumors of a Jason Kidd take over the team by midseason. You can't let some of the stuff that will go on behind the scenes infect the locker room and create the perception that Frank Vogel is not the guy for your group. He needs to be supported. Rob Pelinka needs to be supported. They need to speak with one voice in the front office and one voice in the coaching bench, and that's the only way this team has a chance to be successful.
So just one thought. It's a great point, but do you think that's realistic? I mean, they've gone from one chaotic moment to the next. Do you see any end in sight, or is this just who they are and the way it's going to be for quite some time?
No, of course it's not realistic. I mean, this is going to end, you know, in a disaster. I mean, I just can't see how all the things I said that need to happen actually happen. I just don't. I mean,
or any of them.
I don't. I just don't. I mean, there's just too many people that believe they should have a voice in basketball decisions. And Jim, you know the NBA. That's not how it works. The successful teams, they speak with one voice at the top. Of course there's collaboration. Every team has collaboration. You need that. A GM is not a king. He shouldn't be making all decisions without consulting everybody else. But when once he gets all the information, Sam Presti, Greg Popovich in consultation really with R.C. Buford, Masai Ujiri, Bob Myers, these top-tier GMs, they make the decisions. And everybody knows it. I don't know who is really making the decisions right now within the Laker organization. And really the most crazy thing that came out of that crazy Magic Johnson interview was that he asked for, and he said when he took the job, that he wanted to be basically a part-time team president. But he still wanted final say over basketball decisions. I don't know what's crazier, Jim, that Magic Johnson thought it was okay to ask for that, given this climate, or the Lakers for giving it to him. I mean, you have to spend every hour of every day, really, looking for the next top talent. You have to look at the mid-majors, like the Blazers did, with Lillard and McCollum, who are great young players who flew under the radar for a while. Find them. You got to look to Greece for those 6'9 stringy kids playing in crappy leagues like Giannis was. You have to look for these guys every day of the year, and Magic didn't have that type of investment, and the Lakers knew it, and they still gave him final say on personnel decisions. That, to me, suggests a franchise that just doesn't know what it's doing.
Right, and there is one other guy too, David Griffin. David Griffin was available. They could have had that guy and let him get away too.
Well, Jim, the bigger issue with this is that to the Lakers, everyone was available.
Right,
like they could have written a check. They could have written a check to Sam Presti or R.C. Buford or Bob Myers for $20 million and probably gotten them. Like there really wasn't a limit to the number of guys the Lakers could have gone after and probably could have had. Instead, they elected to do what they always do, which is keep things within the Laker family and run it like a family business as opposed to a real one.
He is an NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, and the host of the crossover podcast, SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, Inside the Paint on SI TV. He is everywhere. Chris, you sound great, man. You are locked in. You're fired up. It's great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Jim.
Great job. Chris Mannix.